bring out the natural paleness of her face and using a deep red rim of lipstick, which she could only afford with an employee discount. She knew the other girls sometimes slipped things into their pockets, but Pearl liked to pay. She wanted to feel that she had earned things and liked the expensive feel of the lipstick. She had her hair tied back from her face. Seen in the mirror, her face is impassive. The guy should look back again. You can see her in an elaborate dress, moving with tiny steps with that hobbled gait. The face expression is knowing, suggesting carnal knowledge refined through the ages. There is something of death in the Oriental ideal, a waxen, lifeless look. There is a whiff of grave breath about it, the sexual stakes raised as high as they can go. It's tempting to see Pearl, she prepared to go out that night, gliding from room to room as though she were in some rice paper partitioned Oriental residence. There is a feeling that shadowy assignations are awaiting her, the erotics of last things. She was to meet Ronnie at the bottom of the Belfast Road. The night was cold. It had snowed several days beforehand and were still icy residues in shadowed areas and on the high ground. Pearl's mother called out to her to take a coat and hat, but she put a wrap around her shoulders instead. The following morning, when Pearl had not arrived home, her mother said, "I was not unduly worried, and I thought that Pearl might have decided to stay the night with one of her friends." There were other dances going on that night. The paper showed there are dances in Maxine's and Thompson's alfresco rooms. The Clippertones are playing in the Flamingo Ballroom. The dance was a fundraiser in the Henry Thompson Memorial Orange Hall. There was a military tone to the evening, the Times, militias and corps represented. There were members of the Territorial Army and the Special Constabulary present. Ronnie was waiting for Pearl at the bottom of the road. Ronnie was quieter than usual. She had always struggled with her complexion, and Pearl advised her not to wear so much heavy pan makeup, which Pearl said blocked the pores. "Where would I be without my slap?" Ronnie said. The skin on Ronnie's face was blotchy and there were spots on her chin. People noticed the contrast between them, Pearl's still mask and Ronnie's pasty, badly made up face. Ronnie had not mentioned her boyfriend McKnight for several weeks, and Pearl had not asked. Ronnie had a temper sometimes. She could lash out and say cruel things that Pearl did not want to provoke her. Earlier that week, they had gone to Filoni's for ice cream. Pearl went to the toilets with Ronnie. Ronnie had gone into one of the stalls and been sick. "Are you pregnant or something?" Pearl said. "None of your business if I am," Ronnie said. "At least I don't have a block of ice between my legs, a little bit frigid." Afterwards, Ronnie followed Pearl out into the street, apologising. She looked as if she was about to cry. "I don't know what came over me," she said. "My big mouth." "I hate that word," Pearl said. When it was news about her in school, she had gone to the library and looked it up. Frozen, her stiffened with cold, chillingly stiff, of a woman sexually unresponsive. "Of course you're not," Ronnie said. "You're just not a slabber like me. You'll suck it out of town. You got self-respect, Pearl." Ronnie knew how to make Pearl laugh. Pearl knew there was no harm in her and allowed Ronnie to link her arm down the street, but the word hung in the air between them. Ronnie had whistled when she saw Pearl dressed for the dance. You look like something from the pictures, Pearl," Ronnie said. "And I'll be looking next or near me tonight. You look like you're headed for that orchid blue." Ronnie hadn't seen this Pearl before. There was a level of sophistication. There was a cool, artful look. People made way for her as she walked towards the entrance of the Orange Hall. The young men of the town gathered there. When they arrived at the Orange Hall, the music had already started. Ronnie dancing to herself in the queue. William Egerton, Joseph Clydesdale, Special Constable William Quinn. Their listed names were already taken on the formal configuration of a witness list. It was 10:30 p.m. Robert McGladrey and Will Copeland arrived at the hall at 11:30 p.m. According to his own account, Robert was wearing a shorty fawn coat. It was impossible to tell what he was wearing underneath. The air in the hall was thick with cigarette smoke. On the way in, Robert picked up Joan Donegan and swung her around. The night's chronology is coming into